BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello, I'm Matthew Price. This is Beyond Today from BBC Radio 4, where we ask one big question about one big story. Today, why would Facebook want to crack down on big tech?
So, I think that there needs to be regulation in at least four areas.
Every year in February, at the Bayerischer Hof Hotel in Munich, in Germany, a few hundred people from dozens of countries meet to discuss keeping the world safe and secure. This year, among the influential people who were invited was Mark Zuckerberg, the founder of Facebook.
There are a lot of decisions in these areas that are really just balances between different social values. Right? What should be the balance between free expression and safety? Right? What is political discourse, and what's the boundary between that and political interference?
And in Munich, Zuckerberg said governments need to come up with new rules for social media. It's not up to Facebook to decide what's allowed, he argued. The politicians need to.
I believe what our responsibility is to build the operational muscle to be able to proactively enforce whatever the policies and regulations are.
Why does he want rules? Social media firms are under pressure to stop the spread of disinformation and to do more to prevent harmful images and videos appearing in your feed, like those that appeared after a gunman attacked two mosques in New Zealand almost a year ago. 51 people were killed.
He took to Facebook and, in the most extraordinary fashion, he live streamed what we believe was his attack in the Al Noor Mosque in Christchurch. It seems it was filmed with some sort of GoPro head-mounted or body-mounted camera.
The footage. One of the people we're going to talk to today is Zoe Kleinman, the BBC's tech reporter.
That live video, I mean, these are extraordinary statistics, I think. It was 17 minutes long, and it was only watched by 200 people who watched it live. And it was 12 minutes after the end of that video before a single person reported it, right? So a tiny number of people watched it, sat there for 12 minutes, did nothing. Somebody then alerted Facebook and said, "What have I just seen?" Within 24 hours of that, Facebook had blocked 1.2 million copies of that video and deleted a further 300,000 within 24 hours. And that's what Facebook picked up and got rid of, either deleted or blocked at the point of upload. Now, when you think about the horror of that, that is an example of Facebook with all of the money that it throws at exactly this kind of thing. The torrent of that video regurgitating itself endlessly all over this platform is horrific. And Facebook said we did our best and probably did, but it's not enough, is it? That is a catastrophic error. You should not have millions of people watching people being shot in real time on a video on a social media platform. No government, nobody would agree that that was freedom of speech.
Well, there's two things that leap out to me there. Is the second bit of your story, which is how much content they were able to take down in a really short space of time. So they got power.
Exactly. They've got power, they've got investment. I mean, I think it's unfair to suggest that Facebook isn't that interested in doing this. I think they are. I think, what are there, 2.3 billion people on Facebook uploading, sharing material in real time. Artificial intelligence, the algorithms that they use to trap stuff, has come an awful long way, but it's not good enough. People are clever. People play games. You know, they use hashtags that you wouldn't associate with particular content to get it through. You've also got to bear in mind they are within communities. And if you're in a community that likes this stuff, nobody's going to report it, are they? If you're relying on people reporting it, well, if you're in a group that wants to see it, nobody's going to report it because they don't want to.
So then that's the second thing that I take from your story, which is that those 200 people who were able to watch a horrific live event, which clearly no platform should be hosting.
Yeah, for 17 minutes.
But that shows that's the limit of their ability to deal with this stuff, isn't it? It's Facebook's.
You could argue that having tried to negotiate this on their own, the social media platforms, the big ones, are now saying, we can't manage this. You do it. You tell us what it is you want us to do. We'll operate within that framework. And we would rather be involved as, you know, there's an enormous amount of lobbying going on, isn't there? Suddenly Mark Zuckerberg's in Europe. He's all over the place. He's writing pieces in the Financial Times. He is desperate to engage because if he's going to have this regulation, he'd like to be involved in the shaping of it as much as possible. Of course he would.
10 years ago, presumably, there were no rules. It didn't really exist.
No, but the numbers didn't exist either, did they? The artificial intelligence didn't exist. This is something that's grown exponentially from Mark Zuckerberg's dorm room, that legendary story of how Facebook started. I don't think anyone, including him, expected it to ever get to this size and stage. And also, you know, innovation is painfully faster always than regulation. So it's kind of exploded while everyone's watched it and thought, oh, well, we should probably do something about this. And by the time they've caught up with it, it's moved on again. So let me tell you what happens in other countries. In Germany, illegal content has to be removed within 24 hours of being reported, or the social media giants, and we're talking about any platform with over 2 million members, face a fine of up to £42 million. So this has obviously sort of woken up these companies. They don't want those fines, so they are removing content very quickly. But the counter argument is people are complaining that they're being censored and that stuff's being removed before it's being considered because the companies want to avoid those fines.
Is that the toughest regulation in the world?
No, Australia has done something very interesting. And actually, there are suggestions, although we don't know yet, there are suggestions that the UK might do this too. And this is to hold individual executives personally responsible for decisions that they make that end up with something illegal appearing on a platform. So if you sign off an algorithm that floats something illegal, let's say, you know, something horrible, up the visibility platform so that lots of people are seeing it, you personally, not Facebook, not your employer, you might face a fine and even criminal charges for distributing illegal content.
So you've got this patchwork of regulation around the world.
Yeah.
What does Mark Zuckerberg mean when he says quite publicly, I want regulation, I want the governments to decide?
What he means is give us a framework to work within, let us shape that framework, and let's end this battle between us versus the authorities. I think he's offering an olive branch, essentially.
If he ever came over here, he could literally walk into Downing Street and have talks with the people who are shaping the regulation.
Well, he's not come here. Very famously, the government has tried several times to get him to come here and talk about his platform and what's going on. And he's refused every time. He's sent someone else. So he has not been here yet, but we might see him now. Political advertising on all platforms is monitored to an extent, but has been proved by researchers over and over again to be massively shaping public opinion. And I think this is another issue where, you know, people like Facebook perhaps underestimated the power that they had. So what we've got now is lots of companies restricting political ads. So Twitter says political messages should be earned, not bought, and has stopped them completely in the run-up to the US election this year, certainly. Google is restricting the advertising that political groups can do. So it can pick by demographic, by age, you know, by gender, for example, but not based on political views. But Facebook has said it doesn't think a company should censor politicians or the news, and it has declined to veto political ads, despite pressure to. But you've got to bear in mind something about economics here. Twitter doesn't make a lot of money out of political advertising. Google doesn't need to make a lot of money out of political advertising. Facebook actually does. Facebook's political advertising revenue is higher. And so it's going to be a little bit more protective of it, possibly.
Liberals care more about illegal immigrants than they do about our own citizens.
Political advertising on Facebook was a massive thing in the last US presidential election.
We need border security. We want people to come into our country, but we want them to come in based on merit and nothing else.
There are people who even argue that Facebook and the Russians won the election for Trump. Ali Breland is another tech reporter, this time in the US. He works for Mother Jones, and he covers internet disinformation.
The entire 2016 election was an example of how the platform was like very ill-equipped to be this massive vehicle of political discourse. Facebook arguably had a lot of influence in the election. It was a tool for people who were organizing. It was this like massively important tool to the US democracy, but democracies around the world. And the idea that a private corporation should have very like low regulation that's controlling all of these things, I think is something that prior to Facebook, if you just asked people about this concept and removed that the specific company from existing, people would largely say, yeah, that should probably be regulated.
Facebook is disruptive. That's the whole point of it. The space that it's in is new. There are few rules that cover what it does and what it's allowed to do.
In the United States, the FEC regulates political advertising, and there's a set of rules that have been broadly applied to radio ads, television ads, and sort of print media ads. And Facebook and Google blew the landscape open when they sort of changed how internet advertising could be done. They opened all of these options and avenues for micro-targeting and all of these things that when the FEC crafted these regulations in the last few decades or so, just couldn't predict. And so Facebook has been operating in this space and has pioneered this new style of political advertising where you can do things you never dreamed of before, where you can target a group of labor union activists specifically in one district in Wisconsin. And so no one's really thought about how these things should be regulated because it's never happened before. And so this is the thing that quote unquote nefarious actors in places like Russia use to try to influence American elections by micro-targeting these groups and try to manipulate and create artificial feelings and sentiment around certain candidates to get them to vote or act in a certain way.
And is there an example of that that stands out?
There's two specific examples, I think, that really elucidate and distill this. One is actually reported on this story back in, I want to say, 2017 or 2018, but in the days after the election, there was Russian trolls captured or sort of glommed on to the stress and the heightened anxieties that a lot of people in the country had after the election of Trump, and created this Facebook event protesting Trump's election, and was sort of able to capture and manipulate the energy into a protest that resulted in as many as 5,000 to 10,000 people showing up and rallying in New York, which I thought was really interesting. And then there was another really good example in Texas where Russian trolls created two different events on Facebook. They created an anti-immigration, I think anti-Muslim event, and then Muslims showed up for a pro-Muslim counter-protest, and they had these two groups kind of face off in the streets in Texas while no one from Russia was actually there that organized it.
What does Mark Zuckerberg say he wants?
Yeah, he says he wants regulation. He reiterated this claim at the Munich Security Conference. He said that, quote, we don't want private companies making decisions on balancing social equities.
It's not just about coming up with the right answer. It's about coming up with an answer that society feels is legitimate. And I just don't think a private company will ever have the weight to create that kind of legitimacy. So
he's sort of sitting down and saying, all right, like we need regulation, but like Facebook has kind of gone as far as it is going to in making difficult decisions on its own. And until regulation happens, we're not really going to do very much.
I'm trying to get my head around this. So Mark Zuckerberg's basically saying the system at the moment doesn't work. But until a government tells us what they want us to do and how they want us to act, we're not going to change anything.
Precisely.
Because he could change it, because he runs the company.
Yeah. What's even crazier, in my opinion, is that he doesn't just run the company. He has created a class of shares for himself to the point where he can't be mutinied out of the company. He has nothing stopping him. There's no board. There's no shareholders like really in his way to keep him from doing any of these things.
And then another thought occurs to me that, I mean, surely Facebook is big enough that if it wanted to change the way it does things, it's not going to damage that fortune that Zuckerberg's built up. It's not going to damage the company.
No, not at all. They have a lot of products that are very successful. They've built up so much money and inertia. You're totally right. I think that the sort of motivation and the fear in handling certain difficult types of things is not in explicitly like damaging bottom lines directly from this, but creating or generating frustration from conservatives and Republicans in the U.S. Congress who could potentially regulate the company, which would restrict it a lot, which wouldn't damage the company overall, but it's something that they're very stressed out about.
So is there any way to solve this where we get to keep all the benefits that we want from big tech, but the companies get policed in a way that is regulated, that keeps us safe?
There are a lot of people who have propositioned really interesting, thoughtful answers that I think are worth considering or looking at, and propose that these companies be broken up to reduce their total amount of power that they have so that they can't control information flows as easily. Other people have, in sort of less popular circles in the United States, have gone as far as saying maybe Facebook or other companies like this should be partially nationalized, or instead of nationalized, potentially worker owned, in a way that they have a product that's not necessarily working in the, explicitly in the interest of profit. And that idea sounds kind of radical until you think of a company like Wikipedia, which isn't worker owned, but is a nonprofit, and is probably one of the best examples we have of a company that is very much a force for good and has resulted in a lot of positive things as far as the spread of information goes, but is also not really radicalized anyone, has not produced deaths in the same way that Facebook has, hasn't produced violent outcomes.
Thanks so much to Zoe Kleinman and to Ali Breland from Mother Jones.
Do you know what's hilarious? While we were talking, Alicia, the producer here, pointed out that you remember that film, The Social Network, about Facebook?
Yeah.
Jesse Eisenberg, who played Mark Zuckerberg, while we were talking about him, walked past here, walked past the studio.
That's amazing. That's so serendipitous. I hope that augurs something good.
Let's hope so. Thanks very much for talking to us.
Thanks also to Katie Gunning, Alicia Burrell, Harriet Noble, who produced, Wei Dong Lin mixed for us, and Philly Beaumont is our editor. Thanks to them, and thanks to you for listening. See you.
Hi everyone, Russell Cain here. I've got just a few seconds to tell you about Evil Genius, our hit podcast, 2.5 million downloads in 2019, top 10, where we take people from history, Gandhi, Margaret Thatcher, John Lennon, and detonate fact bombs around their reputations. It's stuff you don't want to know, but you really do want to know. At the end of a lively debate, my panel of esteemed guests, read banging comedians, all have to vote evil or genius. There's no grey area. This is cancel culture turned into an innovative format. Subscribe to Evil Genius on BBC Sounds now.